Ryan has a very special program today, and we have a very special program following this. It won't be broadcast immediately, but this program today is going to be an interview with an assassination research expert who has done some 7 years of research on the Kennedy assassinations as well as others. And after you've heard the program, if you have any questions or just want to rap a little with Mae Brussel, the expert, you're invited to call KLRB. We'll give you the phone number after the program, not during the program. And these conversations will be recorded and will probably be the basis for another special program tomorrow, consisting of the phone raps with Mae Brussel. So without further ado, we'll turn things over to Gloria now.
With me today is Mae Brussel of Carmel Valley, and she's one of the 12 assassination experts in the country. We're going to talk about the material Mae has collected since November of 1963. And my first question, Mae, is why did you start on the assassinations?
Well, in 1963, I was raising a family and was self-centered and selfish in my own tranquility.
And I also, at the same time, was watching the news develop and the realignment of the Cold War and the policies of our State Department, and wondering if it was possible the United States could have fascism like we had in Germany. And I was watching the stockpiling of the Minutemen and the growth of the Birch Society, which I didn't think was little ladies in tennis shoes. I was taking it seriously. And at the time that John Kennedy was killed, the answers were so pat in the news media that I really wanted to see if he was killed in order to escalate a Cold War or a type of military coup in this country. I wanted to know what kind of a world I was going to raise my family in.
So you started collecting your data.
Yeah, the early newspaper accounts of the assassination showed so many discrepancies. The German Mauser became an Italian weapon, and there was a tip-off from South Carolina that Oswald bought the gun at Klein's in Chicago, and the news media had Oswald handing out leaflets in New Orleans saying that he was a communist and he was for fair play for Cuba, wherein actually they admitted the next day in June 63 he had a passport reissued to go back to Europe and to Russia. And there was no hold on that passport from the State Department. And there were so many discrepancies, his mobility, his moving from country to country, and no explanation of his finances. And then he was killed. And I really wanted to know if Oswald was a patsy.
And your findings?
Oswald was a patsy. And I think, Gloria, we should say right now that the pertinence of having this talk show today is that the New York Times and the Washington Post and every newspaper in the nation is going to begin to pour out documents on what happened to this nation from the day that John Kennedy was killed until the present day. And the truth is that there was an intense desire to escalate the war, a vengeance for his not going into Cuba, and many, many reasons and motives. But today the issue is pertinent because nobody trusts what's happening in Washington. The public figures are being protected. And the truth is that the assassination story is the last strong story for the American people to gulp. This is going to be the biggest medicine they're going to have to put into their stomach, and they're going to have to face it like grown-up people. And they've put it off for 7 years. And the reason we're talking about assassinations today is that the nation is in for one huge shock, one more huge shock. Tomorrow you're going to hear Mr. McCloskey talk about the CIA and the government killing Mr. Diem. When we get home to the fact that the government kills candidates for presidencies or kills presidents, then we can get on the right track and begin to live better lives.
That's a pretty big mouthful, Mae.
Yeah, that's 7 years research.
Yes.
That can be backed up and documented. And if I told anybody what our government did to Mr. Diem 4 years ago, they would have wanted to commit me to an institution. Nobody believed it, but history will prove that my research is accurate right down to the last sentence.
7 years, and now it's all coming to it's all coming.
I never thought it wouldn't. It took 10 years to get Dreyfus out of Devil's Island, and Mr. Zola worked hard. I'm not Emil Zola, but truth and facts and government papers and dates and names and documents and sworn testimony and FBI reports are all that I work, and they back up every word that I say.
That is the basis of your material, Lee. This is the source of your material, right?
The 7 years research is based on the 26 volumes of witness testimony and government documents and State Department papers, which I put into a computer type of operation and cross-filed over and over again till I had columns that added up that gave you a distinct picture of what happened in Dallas and what's happening today in the United States.
Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with Dallas and bring us up to date?
Well, that's a big that's a big thing to chew. Let's start right now with maybe this morning's account of James Reston, which I have here, on the problems in the United States. Mr. Reston is crying now that Washington's in a muddle, that nobody trusts anybody else, that the presidents are under suspicion, President Johnson and President Nixon, and everybody's looking for other motives and dirty tricks. These are his words today, and that everyone has doubts, the executive branch doesn't get along with Congress, and the White House doesn't get along with the reporters, and the Pentagon Papers show deception in the executive branch. Those are Mr. Reston's words. And that the president has, there's evidence that the president will expand a war and deceive the public and intimidate. He says even the most intelligent of men in the civil service, the cabinet, and the White House staff. I think another big thing to swallow is that President Johnson intimidated Earl Warren. The Chief Justice was intimidated and maybe even blackmailed. And I have reason to believe that Earl Warren did not want, he publicly said he did not want to head the commission. But he did it, and I think he was intimidated. There's no other way to put it, because I have the minutes of the meetings of the commissions that have been declassified. And he went along and kept the lid on this conspiracy. And that's a good place to start. I think that Mr. Reston in the New York Times, and this goes all over the entire world, that our president, our chief justice, our cabinet, everyone can be silent and blackmailed or intimidated, and that the people have not been told the truth. You are paying your taxes, you're sending your sons, your country is shaky, your sons go off to die in a war that shouldn't have existed. The lies are coming out, the deaths keep mounting everywhere, and the ones that do go to war, that don't go to jail for not fighting the war, are coming home drugged, and the ones over there are taking drugs today, and the problems are just compounding. But you have to get over the fact that your father figures, your president, your chief justice, your Congress, your heads of your intelligence agencies, all the government agencies can be had, and they were had. And when you realize that you can recognize truth when you see it, you'll be better off. It's hard to accept the breakdown of the father figures, but what you're getting now in New York is a power struggle. Mr. Nixon, President Nixon, I call him Mr. because I do not recognize him. Is my president. He may be yours, but I call him Mr. Nixon, because the candidate who would have opposed him was killed. And until that evidence is out in the open, he's only Mr. Nixon. He is not President Nixon to me. And he does not want the truth told about Mr. Johnson, who is also not my president. He does not want it told. And the reason he doesn't, it was explained in a cartoon that was in the Monterey Herald last night that goes all over the country, where the two men, Mr. Johnson and Mr. Nixon, are whispering to each other. And they know that if the truth comes out on one murder, the truth will come out on another murder. I'm not even going to throw in Malcolm X or Whitney Young or Medgar Evers or Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King is a package deal. The similarities between Ray Oswald and Sirhan in the planning of the deaths of these men and in the men who became decoys and then became patsies, I ran down 35 similarities in 25 minutes in the cover-up stories and the planning stage. And this is a known fact that the people that planned the two murders threw in King to boot. But we'll just talk about the two Kennedys now, because you're talking about power in Washington. That's the name of the game, is power. And when you take away presidents and you take away candidates and you escalate wars and you lie to the people, then you're really talking about who has the power and how did they get it. But when you talk about power, Glory, let me throw this in, that I take it back. The killing of Martin Luther King was very important because Mr. Agnew would not be vice president today if King had not been killed, and that was part of his power play. So on second thought, King was important to the political scene.
I would say so, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a reason at that time. In fact, James Ray said he had to be killed before the elections, the coming up elections. And it's been documented by many, many writers that if it weren't for the riots following King's death, Agnew would never have been selected as a vice president. He came in on the law and order ticket, which was obvious after the black people got excited and frustrated.
I know in some of your research that I have seen, you have... Your cross-index is who met who and where.
How people met.
How they met.
I broke down the whole intelligence operation of our CIA. It may be identical in the Soviet Union, the way agents meet, but my particular interest was the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
One called the family tree.
Yeah, the family tree, the source of connections and how they meet and who introduces one person to the other person and passes it off as a casual meeting when it was very carefully planned in time, split-second timing. When you talk about conspiracies, they're international, they're national, they're local, and you have to be specific. These things are very large. They take in whole areas of operation, like all of Asia or power blocks or the east side of Europe or the west side, or it reduces itself to a city. It depends what area you want to cover.
So in the assassination of President Kennedy and President-elect Kennedy,
yeah,
it's all very closely connected.
Well, it's closely connected, and other researchers have given me documents of the names of particular people outside of the geographical boundaries of the United States. Then it becomes international. I feel that there's a lot going down in Jamaica, and I think whenever the hot seat comes, Mr. Nixon goes for his briefings down to Florida, and then he's flown over to Jamaica, too. The cartels from Germany that were rebuilt and everything, the headquarters are down in Jamaica. And a lot of planning is done in West Germany, and it's international, but at the a lot of levels, there's what they call in the CIA a need-to-know basis. Many people are only told, you be at a certain place and you hand this envelope of $10,000, or you go to this dinner party and introduce Marina Oswald to this particular person. And in a long-range scale, they know nothing except on a basis of need-to-know. That's a standard operating procedure, so that a few people are in on a plan and the rest stand by on just certain orders.
Mentioning Marina Oswald.
Marina is one of the most important women in history, modern history, and she is living in a little sleepy town in Texas. And within a very short time, the world will know more about Marina Oswald and everything that happened. She is not the role that they portrayed. As a matter of fact, one of the most interesting documents I have is in Volume 16 of the commission hearings that's put out by the War Government Printing Office, where Lee Oswald wrote a letter November the 9th in which he was very anxious and nervous because the FBI agent Hostie, James Hostie, had been with Marina Oswald and had offered her, Lee Oswald put in quotes, protection, end quote, and that in his own letter, and in effect citizenship. And he said, I don't trust the notorious FBI. And that letter is photographed as in Volume 16. And 3 weeks later, Lee Oswald was dead, and his wife did have constant protection as well as very large sums of money and her citizenship. Her visa to go back to the Soviet Union, which was to be up shortly, was completely written off the books and her citizenship automatically granted. And this, historically, he put this in writing 3 weeks before he was killed. And what would they be offering her protection from? She was a housewife living in Dallas, And nobody knew of Lee Oswald, and the State Department claims they didn't have much on him, and the FBI certainly wasn't watching him enough that day of the assassination to have surveillance or any information that they considered him dangerous. So what were they going to protect Marina from and give her her citizenship? And this is all my research, Gloria, is done from sworn testimony, as I said before, in the 26 volumes. What were they going to protect her about, and what did he not trust in the FBI? Oswald was probably one of the most brilliant of our agents that the United States ever had. He was trained in electronics and radio work and microdotting and photographic techniques and language skills. He could speak fluent Russian. Just while he was in the service in the Marines, he took his days and nights and self-taught a Russian so that when he arrived in the Soviet Union, he could speak Russian. I said the nation 4 years ago wouldn't believe what I said about Diem, so I'm going to make another prediction that could startle the nation, and I'll use the quotation of Earl Warren from the meetings of the commission. If I told you that I thought Lee Oswald was alive, you wouldn't believe that, but I think 4 years from now it'd be very possible that he has defected to another country. There was a second Oswald, and there's a reason to believe that he was killed. And in the meetings of the commission, the very first meeting that the Warren Commission had, the subject came up of what to do with that body that was buried in Fort Worth, because there were guards around the clock and they had poured tons of cement over this body. And Life magazine quotes the man who buried him saying, "I never saw anything equal to it." And an engineer in Los Angeles who's designed coffins and burial places never read of any such amount of cement. And on top of that cement were these 24-hour guards every 8 hours shifting position. In the first meeting of the commission, what will we do with that body? And the subject says, we have to cremate it. Earl Warren said, "With nation can't stand another shock." And then the members of the commission spoke up and said, "Well, is that in our jurisdiction?" "It's out in Texas." So Earl Warren said to Katzenbach, the attorney general, "Will you give orders to Mr. Carr out in Texas, who's the attorney general there, and then Texas can do it because it's in their jurisdiction." So whatever is under that coffin, history will have to tell, but I don't think Earl Warren wanted anybody to find out whose body was in there. That's another subject all in itself, but I think we have to grow up and take some of these shocks. What was the shock that the nation couldn't take in case anybody would get to Oswald's grave? In lieu of the evidence, there's been a book out by a professor in San Diego, Popkin, on the second Oswald, and this book was written in a hurry. It took him 4 years to write it. It's 7 years now, and since he come across the second Oswald, we're moving around the Dallas-Fort Worth area, New Orleans, and everywhere else, there's been so many more evidences of a second Oswald, he could write a second book. I think this is one of the big problems that Jim Garrison had in New Orleans, was that he didn't realize that it was the second Oswald that was working with Clay Shaw. The other Oswald wasn't in on that meeting. I think it was the other Oswald, it was the second one, who had a stubby beard, which Lee Oswald didn't have at any time, and this was part of the confusion. Most of my friends and acquaintances and the people I talk to say, "May, don't say so much because you'll turn people off." And I can't say half the truth. That's what your elected congressman does. He tells you half the truth. That's what your public officials do, like Hubert Humphrey got on television when the New York Times exposure came out, and he says he didn't know these things were happening. Then 2 days later, I have an article where he said he did know. Now, I saw him on television say he didn't know about the plans to escalate the war in 64, that he was only a senator, and now he admits that he did know. Then he said, "I told President Johnson that I didn't approve of the escalation of the war in private, but in public, I gave my approval." Well, I'm not that kind of a person. That's the kind of person you allow to be your vice president. I'm not that kind of person, and if people don't like what I say, I will continue to work with their sworn testimony and their reports and affidavits, and truth will be shown someday. But I'm not going to make it pablum feed you and tell you a little bit of lies and cover up so that somebody buys half of the story.
No, I don't want to be told what they think I want to hear.
You may not like what I hear, but you don't. Most people really don't have a right to disagree unless they have the evidence laid out on a table in front of them. They may say, "I don't like it." But they can't say you're wrong, and that's what people have said to me, and I look at them and I turn away and I feel sorry for them, because their own ignorance will kill them, and it will bring wars on our soil, and other nations will hate us because we are afraid to face the truth.
And, you know, like, getting the truth, that is a big problem in this country, and I don't think many people are aware of it. The fact, May, you're working at a radio station, the fact of the second gun in the Robert Kennedy assassination,
yeah,
did not come over
the wire services.
No.
Well, you know, let's talk about the truth and the radio stations today. And I will keep quoting the minutes of the commission members, Earl Warren and the Honorable Commission, this prestigious commission, because when you hear them talk, and these minutes are read, and you can buy copies of these minutes, they're published, and I can get the information for you on where you can buy them, then you know how these men really think. And one of the big problems when the Warren Commission first met was, what are we going to do about the news service coming over? There's so much, you know, leaks and information and talk of conspiracy. And Congressman Ford said, well, gentlemen, he says, I can handle the AP and the UP, meaning the Associated Press and United Press. The problem we're going to have is our little local papers, where they're going to want stories. Now, let me say that the Monterey Peninsula Herald and the San Jose Mercury are my two best sources for many pieces of information I put together, because they are not controlled. And if something does come over the wire service, if it comes over, they're not afraid to print it. But the major services, even running a news station, you can only report what comes to you from Associated Press, United Press. And my articles, I take 8 newspapers a day and to compare many, many things. And very often when there's a significant article on any of these murders and political assassinations, I look at the bottom and it says Reuters. It comes from Germany back to the United States. Our wire service doesn't carry it. And you're not getting, like you say, in Los Angeles, 10 days ago, the evidence came out of 2 weapons, 2 serial numbers in the shooting of Robert Kennedy, 2 sets of bullets. One kind of bullet was in 4 people that were killed in the ambassador. Another kind of bullets were in Robert Kennedy.
They were wounded in the ambassador.
They were wounded, yeah, in the ambassador. But the point is this, it doesn't come over. No, none of my friends in Carmel even know this is happening. No one around the world realizes it. They hope to kill the story by silencing it, and this is happening every day.
Yeah.
I think there's something very important. There's a word, national security, that is holding up this truth, and this is the crux of the articles coming out in Washington now on the war, and it's the crux of the assassination thing. In order to keep the people happy that John Kennedy was killed by Lee Oswald, the commission's only public statement was continuously, in quotes, there's no new evidence, end quote, and the National Archives will lock up for 75 years for national security much of the evidence on this murder. Now, the whole issue in Washington today, if you read carefully the decision of the judges in Washington, New York, is that national security seems to be to save the face of Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon. It is not... I have questioned always, whose security is it, yours and mine or theirs? And if they are vulnerable, they have to stand naked and be exposed. There's nothing in the Constitution that protects public figures from misdeeds.
Right, and it's as though they think we're not capable of...
Of knowing what's happening.
Of knowing what's happening.
That's what...
And that incenses me.
That's right. Tomorrow, Mr. McCloskey is going to put information out that he said today, if you just read it yourself, you'll figure out what's happening. And the newspaper articles and the judges in Washington, New York, are saying the presses have to roll because the people can see and then come to their own conclusions. We have to decide what security is involved in not telling us who killed the president. No nation is going to invade us. It doesn't change our diplomatic relationships. We have to really know if national security is keeping tied up in the archives people that were involved with Lee Oswald and the Dallas-Fort Worth people and their income tax returns since the assassination and many, and the role that Lee Oswald played in the U-2 flights while he was in Russia. And all these things are locked up there. We have a list of what's locked up for 75 years, and it's tantalizing. And whose security is this for? It's for, I think we have to get it out so that we become secure. It's a matter of interpretation. I think the people in Washington now are...
It's protecting a few.
A handful of people.
A handful of people.
Who gained power and hoped to achieve what they thought was the best interest of the United States. They may have been sincere in their motives. They may have thought, if we kill these people, that we'll save the world from communism because they're too soft on the communists. And historically, nothing that they did is proven correct. And if their decisions were wrong, they should say, I made this decision, but it seemed to be wrong. They have to account for what they did. They can't be protected any longer.
No, because down the ranks, you know, like if you erred badly, you would be prosecuted.
Yeah.
You would,
absolutely.
You'd have to stand before your peers.
Absolutely. If I've made a mistake, I have to stand there. And they should have to explain why national security was involved in not letting us see where the bullet lodged in John Kennedy's back.
Do you want to expound on that a little bit?
Well, the hardcore evidence of the assassination, you can go into, it breaks itself down into hundreds and over a thousand different categories, and you can take any specific area, the actual ballistics, the bullet trajectory, the evidence of the crossfires, the getaway cars. I know all that, and I have all that material, but that is not my specialty. My real interest has always been in the covert activities. Now, you read in the newspaper, the New York Times exposures that are so pertinent today, talk about the covert government. That is a government behind our back that makes decisions which the elected officials don't even know about. They overthrow other countries and kill the rulers and kill our own. And the covert activities are the ones I'm interested in because we don't elect them. Those are the secret governments. When President Kennedy was elected, he was told that he had to go into Cuba and invade, and he realized that he was being given some bad information. He pulled back from that decision and made the statement, there's a hidden government behind my back. Well, it wasn't hidden very long because they shot him from behind the back. But in the interim, he removed all the heads of the CIA he felt were running the country because he had been elected and he wanted to make some of the decisions. The people had, for better or worse, said, John Kennedy, you're my president. If Alan Dulles wanted to run for president, he should have run for president. But he wasn't our president. He can't tell our president what to do. But as soon as Mr. Kennedy realized that, or President Kennedy, he was shot, and then Alan Dulles was put on a commission to investigate his death. It was very convenient, and so was Richard Russell, who was the lone watchdog of the CIA for the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And Gerald Ford and all Mr. Hale Boggs of Louisiana. And the commission was neatly stacked with all of Johnson's buddies and with Southern races who didn't like the civil rights program of Mr. Kennedy and they didn't like the Vietnam policy or his opinion on the intelligence government. The commission was totally stacked except for Senator Cooper, and he just sits there so quietly and says nothing. It's pitiful. I don't think he's one of the bad guys, but to sit there and do nothing makes you just as guilty, I think, to be a part of it. Sign your name to it is just as guilty as to plan the assassination. Well, I don't think, you know, a lot of people say to me, well, what are you doing this for? You can't bring John Kennedy back. And then somebody said to me last night, why is all this coming out now? Why are these exposures coming out now? What is pertinent to today? And I say that in Washington and in the Eastern Coast, where the power structure lies, and they're talking about 72. You open your papers, and they talk about Muskie and McGovern and Bay, and who's going to run on the Democratic ticket, or is it going to be Teddy? And the truth is that nobody's going to run who isn't going to be killed, and they know it. And now they have to tell the truth. It has to come out, because only somebody like Senator Jackson, who's in with the Pentagon, you know, he plays the role of the liberal, George Jackson from Washington, Washington State, he plays the role of the great domestic liberal. But he is the man that Richard Nixon wanted for the Secretary of War before he appointed Laird. And the important thing is that you're not going to have choices ever again. And there are people back there who know it. So now the truth has to come out about who's running the government, because you can't have an election. And I always hoped that before 72, I'd say that all of this would break before 72, or else there'd be no hope. So now everything is coming to a head back there. And oh, back to this subject, somebody said to me last night, well, would you really want Ted to be president of the United States? Is that what you want? Because if the Democrats felt that the only one that they could get to beat Richard Nixon would be Ted Kennedy, they would put him in for the nomination, even knowing he'd be killed. And people say to me, do you really want Ted Kennedy as president? And I say, that is not the point of this thing at all. My research or anything else, I may not vote for Senator Kennedy as president. I didn't vote for Lyndon Johnson. If I don't like the person, I don't have to vote for them. But if the majority of the people want him, he should have the right to run and not be killed. I don't have to say I like him. But if you want him...
But that's no reason to kill him.
If there's national guilt that they feel that we owe the Kennedys something, even if they know he's not the best man, he isn't a bad man, but if you want him, just like I don't want Richard Nixon as my president, but I wouldn't kill him if he was in. If you want him, you can have him, but he should deserve to live out his term. And the Democrats know that nobody they put in is going to live. And they have to know the truth, and these stories are going to continue to break now. And I don't think there's going to be an end to digging out the dirt until we come to some conclusion what we're going to do with this country. Now, the next thing Stuart Symington said this week, let's set up a body in Congress to put all this material out on a table and see what is national security, what is truth, who we're protecting. I don't think the power is Congress. I don't think those men have the guts or the strength. I think they talk out of both sides of their cheeks. They don't touch the real issues. Maybe some of them can be reached. There's not very many. I don't know who it would be. We're in a really bad situation here because these men can be had. They look the other way. I know in 1966, Eugene McCarthy was on the peninsula, and he was helping Jerry Barron run for Democratic congressman at the time. And President Johnson was in Manila. And I met with Eugene McCarthy, and I said, look, this country's going in for a big upheaval, that Oswald was an agent of the CIA. And he acknowledged that, and he had me speak to an aide of his, and we talked for about 45 minutes. I said, why don't you come to my home, and I will show you the evidence. And this was 1966. And I will show you the evidence, and I predicted then that President Johnson would not run in 68. That Bobby Kennedy would blackmail him and have the goods. And when the nation was surprised that he didn't run, I knew for 2 years he wasn't going to run. But the point is this, Eugene McCarthy said, well, I can't stay over in Carmel tonight. I'm going to San Francisco. But what I'm going to do, he says, I'm having dinner at Trader's, and I'm going, it's me and the Democratic bigwigs in San Francisco. And he says, what I'm going to do will help you in the long run. So he went up there and he met with Ann Allenson, who was Democratic chairman of the state, and worked with the national group, and I've talked to Ann many times, and I've said, look, the Democratic Party's going to go downhill. It can't move. It's involved in this dirty work. Well, Senator McCarthy went back to Washington, and I corresponded with him, and he never had the guts to say that Oswald was an agent of the CIA, and he has even been accused since that time of himself being an agent of the CIA that simply came to power to smoke out Bobby Kennedy to run against Johnson, to make it look like there was a competitive kind of thing going, where I really feel that a deal was made long before. And Senator McCarthy showed his colors in Chicago when the kids were being gassed and he didn't come to them, and now he comes out again and says he thinks he'll run again. These kind of people are of no value to you and me as citizens. They play every side. They play both ends from the middle. They can't tell the truth. And it's pitiful. And how can you trust men in Congress? He was in Congress then. And he couldn't face 1 hour of the truth. All he thought about was his own face, saving his own face. So who you turn to is a very difficult problem. Who is going to take the truth and run from there? Mr. Reston said this morning that everything in Washington is a ball game. He said there's no relationship going on today in Washington. The political game as it played in Washington is a football game without boundaries, rules, or officials. I could have told him that years ago. I wrote to him. I've written him piles of letters, and he too has played the game. He makes money to write these columns to tell you about the problems, but he can't face them either. He knows they exist. He won't face them.
have any solutions, what you think might be solutions to...
How to face this?
Yeah.
Well, I think when you're talking about these situations, you have to think, and I have thought many times, like, what are the alternatives? And I suppose, you know, years ago, cancer was a terrible disease, and if a member of the family had cancer, they used some other name when they passed away, and they avoided it. And now today, if somebody has cancer, they say, well, I've got a lump or I've got a malignancy, and they go to the doctor and get a surgeon and treat it or get x-ray treatment. First, you have to admit you have the disease, and then you go for the cure. And this country certainly has a disease. Now, I've been trying to think of what are the possibilities. Do you set up a puppet government? And what do you do with an attorney general like John Mitchell and Nixon and Spiro Agnew, with that team? They're just a succession of the Johnson group. They work hand in glove. They're thicker than anybody could ever imagine. And all the Texans, John Connally, Secretary of Commerce, this is all tied in with what happened in Dallas way back in 63. What do you do? I think first you have to get some brains in this country to sit down and admit what the problem is. And then I think we can come to a solution. But until they can come out openly and quit scurrying around, then I can't figure it out alone. I've tried, but I need help, but I need them to admit first what the disease is. There has to be some kind of a puppet government set up. So what would you do if you were invaded or all your heads were killed in a plane crash? What if they were all in a situation that Washington was bombed? There must be Rand Corporation or somebody must have an alternate government or study set up of what you would do if, say, a bomb hit Washington, who would run the country? And then you take that puppet government and you put the evidence out on a table and you dissect it like you do a body at the time of an autopsy, and you analyze what went wrong and you get some honest, decent people to begin running the government again. That's all you can do.
Yeah, remove those now. Set
totally.
Them aside, yes.
I would be very harsh. I don't want to embarrass anybody and say I'd try all of them for murder, but I'll say that.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, okay.
I would call a halt. I don't think you even have to try and convict these people. You take a man like Lyndon Johnson, who tells you he gave the country the most welfare benefits in the nation, and he instigated the civil rights, and you hear him talk, he saved the country. But he can't walk down one street in America. If you tried him and convict him, he couldn't be more of a prisoner than he is down that ranch today. And the truth is that this week, after 1 week of bombing him verbally for his role of deceiving the nation, his first public statement to come out in Newsweek was that the ghost of Robert Kennedy is doing this to him. I think that tells you where we're at, doesn't it? It was beautiful because the people say, what do you want, vengeance? Do you want blood? Do you want him hung? I don't want anything. I want to be able to live my life, and I want you to live your life. And there isn't one person, and I have many, many cross files, Gloria, on all different people involved in assassination, and there isn't one of them that's a free man today. If you want to go out tonight with your husband and enjoy the town and have a drink, you two of you can go anywhere you want and do what you want. But Mr. Nixon has to take Bebe Rebozo with him. How would you like that for baggage? How would you like that every time you get in a car or go on the Potomac or take your 30-year-old sweetheart that you have for 30 years out somewhere? How would you like Bebe Rebozo with you flying everywhere?
Everybody's
and that's not all. Yeah, not one of these people, the people that were involved with Marina Oswald, the Dallas-Fort Worth area that she lived with, that introduced her to another person, that were involved in the motorcade, that were involved, anybody that was involved, that you never see their name in the news, they never leave their geographic area, they're not traveling around the country, they are prisoners of their own deeds, and they don't have to be tried. There isn't a night that they don't know what they did, from Lyndon Johnson on down, and they have to live with themselves. I don't want anything from them. I just want to be able to have people know the truth so we can have some beautiful living going on around here and have a free country again.
Do you think, with all the, with the newspapers coming out about the assassination of, you know, the implication of
Diem,
do you think that our own assassinations will ever be brought before the public so that they can view them? Do you think that...
Well, I think you're doing a great job, Gloria, in letting me talk to the people, and I made a tape for an FM station in San Francisco this last week, and I'll be making one in L.A. in a week or two. the exposure now is coming out about the Vietnam escalation that began before John Kennedy was even culled in December of 63, and now the exposure of our government planning the death, the coup of Mr. Diem. When I was in Los Angeles about a week and a half ago, I met with Robert Blair Kaiser, and he wrote the book RFK Must Die. And Mr. Kaiser is the only person in the United States who had access and visited with Sirhan Sirhan almost continuously, sometimes every day or every third day, from the time he killed Robert Kennedy, or let's say from the time he shot a gun. You know, there are two guns and two sets of bullets now, so
right.
We're not even sure that that was the fatal bullet. But he has been with Sirhan continuously, and Robert Kaiser is on the inside, higher in government than I can ever be right now, but I'll be there with them someday, wrapping this stuff around. But the man who introduced the two of us told me that Mr. Kaiser felt that the single issue, the biggest issue of the 1972 campaigns was going to be the political assassinations. And that is why he wanted to meet me. I was meeting with Tom Ritt from KPFK, and Mr. Kaiser wanted to meet me, and he will be up on the peninsula to work with me, and we will be corresponding and communicating. And he thinks this will be the single issue, and I have felt that it is the only issue that the United States can face before it discusses the economic problems, the economy, Vietnam, civil rights, any other problems that are festering this nation. This is the most important thing. And what people can do is, like we said before, redefine the word national security. When the Warren Report was completed in September 64, Chief Justice Earl Warren said that in the National Archives, locked up for 75 years, would be information on the assassination of John Kennedy that none of us could see in our lifetime. And he used the word, which is being thrown around today in the press, for reasons of national security. And I think you should write your congressman, your senator, you should wire everybody in public office that you know that we want the National Archives opened up now. We want to see John Kennedy's coat. We want to see if that hole is 5 inches below the neck in his coat, which has never been examined, to see if it could exit out the Adam's apple. The trajectory of the bullet has been questioned. We want the undeveloped x-rays of the body. We want the names of the people involved. If Oswald did it alone, all of this should be put out for us. There's a suit going on in Washington now, Bernard Fensterwald, against the National Archives on a Rights to Information Act, because Robert Kaiser had FBI papers on Sirhan Sirhan that no one else in the nation can see. And if Mr. Kaiser is a writer and he can see them, why can't I see them? Why can one man out of millions of people in this country have access to these papers? If Sirhan did it, if Oswald did it, let us all see the information. There's nothing to hide. And as long as we can't see that information, we're going to suspect everybody and want to know why we can't see it. So I think it's pertinent to the 1970s, these years, to this week, Ted Kennedy came out and said he wanted all of the policies of his brother examined, all of the problems of the 60s. He said all of them. That's the first squeak from a Kennedy in all these years. And I think they're ready for the truth now. And I think you should be ready and receive it and be glad that it's given to you, that it will help you have a better life.
Thank you, Mae Brussel.
Okay, Gloria.